Journey Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, as together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
My name is Jamie, and I serve as one of the pastors at the Journey Church. If you are brand new or have been following our podcast for years, thanks for inviting us into your life. I pray that God has used our story and the teachings here at Journey to guide you and to bless you. We, as a church, are in a time of transition. The factory, our home for most of the last decade, has new ownership and new vision, and our church is not a part of that vision. So sometime soon, we will be transitioning to a new home. Would you pray with us as we search for a place to gather and to serve? We're super excited about the adventure, and we're looking forward to what God has in store for us, but we have a whole new set of financial challenges. If you felt loved and served by Journey, would you consider serving us at our point of need? Either through tithing or one-time gifts, your financial support will help us continue to exist as a church that serves not only the local community, church planting initiatives, international missions, but people like you around the world who have found Journey to be a bit of a home away from home. You can easily give by going to journeyfranklin.com and clicking on the Give button located on the top right-hand corner. Thank you again for making us a part of your life.
Well, good morning, church. It's great to be with you this morning. If you're a guest with us, welcome. My name is Jamie. I'm one of the pastors here. We've been in a season of vision, and we're transitioning now into a conversation about spiritual practices and spiritual discipline, recognizing that in particular for the time in front of us, we need a spiritual vitality. We want to be spiritually vigorous, and in order to do that, how are we intentional with how we follow in this Jesus way, this apprenticeship in Jesus living? And we certainly know that there are distractions everywhere. It's difficult to to be disciplined. There's a reason the word discipline for a lot of us is not a fun word. It's not easy. And yet we all know that when we are disciplined, there is this great benefit that comes with discipline. So this conversation on disciplines, we're going to start with this word, the spiritual discipline of simplicity. We live in a society that prides itself in the accumulation of possessions. That's Western culture. We're bombarded with advertisements that tell us we need more, and we're conditioned to believe that we are in need of yet another pair of shoes, a new set of tools, more gear, another dress. And for those of you involved in marketing and advertising, I want to say this. It's not that advertising is a sin or it's wrong. We have to communicate. If we have something of value, it's important to communicate it. The challenge is that the culture in which we live in, it's the sheer volume of it all. And so I want to say this to you, not for somebody, oh, well, this is good, this is an excuse for me. Not necessarily that, but to say, look, we understand this is our culture. Every culture is its own point of tension and struggles. And ours is there's a conditioning that happens daily in our lives that's saying essentially, because of the volume, you've been deprived. Have you gone 3 weeks without a new pair of clothes? You have been deprived. Do your tools have rust on them? Do you not have a new car? The message that's being sent to you is you are deprived and you need more. And if you can just have some more, life will be so much better. In particular, if you have the product they're sharing. And so we live in this culture where this message is being sent to us over and over and over again. And the accumulation of things is not new to Western culture. The accumulation of things, or certainly money, has been a part of cultures throughout history. So what an opportunity then to go back and see how Jesus dealt with it in his day and how it relates to us in our day. Luke chapter 12, Jesus is teaching. He's walking around on the planet, having interactions with people. He's going to dinner. He's having conversations. He's turning water into wine. He's doing lots of fun things. And at one point, he's in a crowd. They're having conversations about something, and a man yells out in the crowd. It's Luke 12, verse 13. Teacher, hey, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. I don't know if any of you have had prayers like that with God. God, tell my brother, tell my wife, tell my husband, tell my... Hey, God, do my bidding. This is just kind of the moment when Jesus replied, hey, man, I like that. Man, like, in our vernacular, I could be like, bro, dude, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? And then there'd be the moment in the crowd like, ooh. And Jesus doesn't stop there. He doesn't pause. It's an opportune moment. He says, hey, he looks at all the crowd, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Wow, so here's an opportune moment for this man to hear clearly and for the crowd to have a teachable moment. Look in verse 13. This is an important thing for us to understand about our needs. What we want is not usually what we need. The circumstance that created the desire is probably meant to teach us more than immediate gratification. I want you to think about that. The circumstance that's arrived in your life, the circumstance that has been created, and the circumstance that's affected or created this desire within you is probably meant to teach you a whole lot more than just for you to experience immediate gratification. Perfect example is what we're experiencing with this church building. We knew 2 years ago we were being asked to leave. We started a process of looking. What if we would have got up 2 years ago and said, hey, just so you guys know, the factory, they called us up. They said, hey, they don't want us to continue here. We need a new space. And the next week we got up and went, hey, we looked around for a new space. There was one right down the road. We had $5 million laying around, and we bought it. So if you guys could just help us move in next week. Like, that could have been the thing. What would we have missed out on in these 2 years? A lot of tension, some struggle, questions, wondering, curiosity, some iron sharpening iron as we really refine the vision and say, who are we meant to be? And so while the desire, the circumstance was created, a desire like, oh, I guess we need a building, in the process, something was happening in us. And I think it's the same for you. If you look at the individual things in your life, you might feel like right now I'm in great need, or I'm in great want, or I might even be in great crisis. And you're looking for relief or immediate gratification. And God typically does not go, here, let me resolve it. He goes, there's something for you to learn in the midst of this tension. In verse 14, we understand as Jesus is saying this, hey, Jesus rarely gives us what we want the way we want it when we want it. And that's what he says to this man. Hey, I'm not the arbiter here. You don't get quick resolve. And actually, let me point out something. Be careful of greed. It's nipping at your heels. Watch for it. Have some accountability in place. There needs to be, when he says guard, think constant vigilance. So for some of you, you go, man, I get the word greed. When it comes to things, I like stuff. I love buying stuff. So the greed thing, I'm really aware of it. But maybe the greed is not related to things. Maybe it's related to relationships. Maybe it's related to success. It might be related to something else. See, greed is broader than just our money or our possessions. And so where's the place in your life where you're going, man, this is a place I fall quickly the victim to greed. Is there accountability in place? Is there a constant vigilance? Have you put a discipline to help you when greed comes barking? And here's the thing. It's not like a one time, I'm glad I dealt with greed. At least I got that one knocked out. God, send me the next sin to deal with. It's a lifetime of recognizing that the struggle will exist. Now, I do think as we put disciplines in place and we practice, we get, literally, physiologically, there are new neural pathways in our brains where it becomes easier to resist the temptation that comes with greed, but it will always be there. Here's the thing that begins to play out as we continue through this passage, and we're going to continue reading in just a minute because Jesus then moves on into a parable. We'll go to that story in just a second. But I want to give you here's kind of the headline. having a lot of stuff is not highly attractive in the kingdom way, because it becomes cumbersome and distracting. So the message, the underlying message, I think what Jesus is saying both to this man and then as he's saying to the crowd through this story is this: hey, how can you simplify? Can you find a way to simplify? There's a wonderful little book that recently has sold 3 million copies. It's written by a fiery Japanese woman named Marie Kondo. And it's called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Have any of you read that? In it, she writes this, and it's so insightful. Our possessions very accurately relate the history of the decisions we have made in life. In other words, our possessions tell a story. The things that we own are reflective of who we are. They speak about where we come from and where we hope to go. Our possessions describe in vivid detail and make us rejoice or make us heartsick. They reveal what we think about ourselves and what we hope others will think about us. When we go to make a purchase, some of us are spending time staring at the tag, wondering about the brand. And how will this brand affect how I am perceived? Some of the things that we own and some of the things that sometimes own us are subtle and some are more obvious, but each item says something about who we are and whom we value. I want you to think about this from this perspective for a second. The primary role of a parent is to support and encourage the physical, emotional, spiritual well-being of their child. I think if you're a parent, we'd all kind of agree on that. That's a baseline responsibility for us as a parent. As a matter of fact, if you were adopting and you were to go to a judge in town in the final stages of your adoption, you would stand before the judge, place your hand on the Bible, and promise to do these things for the rest of your life, that you would encourage the physical and emotional, spiritual well-being of your child. And this you would have to do before the judge would actually sign off on your ability to parent a child. Now, those of you who've been through adoptions, you know, you understand, like, the process is detailed. And the level of commitment is questioned. Are you up for this? Which is really interesting in comparison with people who have children naturally and some who never even think through that. But if you long to be a parent and you're a good parent, this is the kind of a thing you think through and you give your attention to and you make a commitment to. But think about this. God is a better parent than the one we could ever promise to be. So if this is what we would say as a parent, man, I want to encourage and help, protect, bless my children. Imagine what the God, the Father, as a parent is like. He makes promises and keeps them over and over and over again without failing. And yet, how often do we still doubt? Do we still question? Do we succumb to fear? Do we allow our greed to take over and make our purchases? How often do we misuse our resources because of the disruption that's going on in the deep places of our soul? Let me say that again. How often do we misuse our resources because of the disruption that's going on in the deep part of our souls? Jesus continues in his interaction with the man who feels entitled to his money and with the crowd, and he goes on to tell them this story. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop, and he thought to himself, well, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to myself, you've got plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool. This very night, your life will be demanded from you. And then, who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And Jesus summarizes, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich toward God. I can't tell you the stories I've heard of those who have passed on and left stuff for their children. They didn't take it with them. And the children may or may not even value it. What's going on with the person in this story? Jesus is telling us this story for a reason. He's highlighting not just the behavior, but the heart attitude of the man, the farmer, the businessman in this story. Five times in verses 17 through 19, he speaks of what I will do, as if he owns it all. By the way, to clarify, he didn't make his money in an immoral way. It's not that he did something wrong in the way he made the money. No, he just had great success in business. The issue is he went to the wrong place and asked the wrong question. It was self-centered. In his desire for comfort and pleasure, he neglects the pursuit of God. In our desire for comfort, or in our desire for pleasure, we often neglect the pursuit of God. Some of us might say, you know, we're talking about spiritual practices, and I knew you were going into this thing, but the truth is I just don't have any time for spiritual practices. And granted, we're going to talk about a number of different practices, and I don't believe that we ever get to live like, here's eight spiritual practices, and we live them all equally every single day of our lives. I don't think that happens. I think there are seasons, and one practice takes over a little bit more time than others. And how the Spirit is leading us, and how we're creating accountability structures, or how we're pressing forward into what's ahead. So I think there's an ebb and flow to that. And Jesus is constantly telling us stories that are not focused on just behavior, but always back to an issue of the heart. And I love this. Sarah McIntosh, who helps me do some of my research on this, she came up with this line. It's such a great line. She says this: the decision to hoard is an impaired prudence. Isn't that an interesting line? The decision to hoard is an impaired prudence. In other words, it might feel prudent to save some stuff. Some of you still have stuff from Y2K. Like, it's still in the basement. You know, you're sure that Y2K didn't happen, but there's another. Something else is going to. Some of you young people are like, what's Y2K? Just ask your parents. But some of us, we got to be prudent. The apocalypse is coming, and who knows who's going to be the next president? So there's a sense of prudence, but is the prudence impaired? Is it disproportional? Is it inappropriate? What really are we gathering? And again, back to what Marie Kondo says. I mean, here's a woman who's been doing this for years, says, letting go is far more important than adding to. Which it really relates to a line we use a lot here by Richard Rohr, who says that spirituality is much more about subtraction than addition. That it's in the letting go that we actually sometimes find more space to know ourselves, to feel, to hear the voice of God, to be able to press forward. That it's in the clutter of our lives, both physically and emotionally, that we get stuck, that we get depressed, that we get frustrated, that we get angry. What else do we see in the parable of this rich fool? We see that his goal is comfort and then withdrawal. I'm going to do all this for myself and make myself happy. I'm going to disengage. I don't have to work now. I'm just going to take life easy. And how often when we have removed weight, not out of Sabbath, not an intentional space to seek God, but when we just go, you know what, I'm just going to stop working in that lazy experience, we're off. We get all out of rhythm. And clearly, his goal is his comfort and his withdrawal. You notice this. He feels no concern or responsibility for anyone else. That doesn't come up at all in his thinking. Whoa, I've got all these crops. Man, my neighbor did not have the crop I had. Man, I heard the story recently of those in another country who are struggling in famine. None of those questions come up. As soon as he finds out he's got this crop, he goes, I need bigger barns. There's no concern or responsibility for anyone else. And finally, he's called a fool. A fool is someone who acts without God and in a self-destructive way. And the easy application here is, have we made decisions in our purchasing that have been self-destructive? They're actually distracting us from giving God glory. They're actually preventing us from carrying the love story forward. Maybe because we have to protect it. Maybe because we have to manage what we've purchased. God is always testing our hearts. And the call of the kingdom is to simplify. What will we keep? What will we give away? When we don't trust God as our Father, we yearn for, fight for, and we cling to anything else that looks like it could provide for our physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Isn't that true? How often do you feel this disruption in your heart or your soul, and somehow, just to give yourself some relief, you buy something. You go shopping. You escape in some other form. Maybe it may not be in the purchase of something, but maybe it's your greed for time away. And it becomes obsessive. And you're disconnected from your family who needs you. But you're so greedy with your own self time, you're lost in your video game or you're on the road or whatever the thing is. And the truth is, it's a way for you to have relief from the actual pain you're meant to deal with. Why? Because the God of the universe keeps bringing us back to that tension to say, hey, I want you. I'm going to make these other circumstances difficult because I want to draw your attention back to me. You know, God gives these illustrations of a lover. Like, I'm fighting for you. I want you. Come back to me. And sometimes we get so lost in the stuff. So you say, well, how? Like, what's my confidence and how would I know how to even kind of evaluate what's in my life? Well, Jesus continues. He says to his disciples, he finishes with the crowd, he breaks this down to his disciples, and he says this, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. Do they not sow or reap? Or they do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, and yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable are you than birds? Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? And since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, then how much more will he clothe you? O you of little faith. And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Seek first the kingdom. The other stuff will line up. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. So sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now I imagine for some of you that have grown up in the church, some of these are familiar words. Perhaps you even have some of these sayings printed on a piece of wood hanging in your home, or maybe you grew up and your mother had a magnet on a refrigerator that where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And yet it's a profound truth. It's something we often forget. So let me give you three practical ways. You say, how do I check with me? How do I know? Number one, here's the way you can move forward in simplicity and evaluate our possessions kind of dictating your life. Number one, redefine the word needs. So when you have a conversation in your home and you're talking about what you need, be really clear about the need. You're having a conversation with your spouse. You say, oh, honey, I mean, the new Black Ops is out. I need to pick it up. I need to do the pre-order. And what? Well, I mean, I need to, because if I don't, it might not be there. This is a very profound need in my life that I mean, there's a sale at TJ Maxx, and I need to get there tomorrow because this stuff goes fast, you know. What's the need? So redefine the word need. Number two. Remember your true identity. Remember your true identity. See that your needs are really defined in verses 22 and 23. Your identity is right here. For the pagan world runs after these things. But seek after the kingdom. He has given you the kingdom. Where's your identity? Your identity is in Christ. So when you look at a purchase, if you're hung up on the brand name, ask yourself why. You go, I can't buy that, because if somebody sees me with that, they'll think that's an identity issue. Oh, I have to buy that because I need to tell my friend that I own that. Do you see how those are little decisions we make to relieve to deal with our little egos? Our purchases have to do with little egos. Instead of a confidence that says, no, this purchase is the right purchase, it's the stewardship decision for my family. My identity is grounded. It's right, it's whole, it's good. This is me and God. The purchase doesn't affect who I am. And number three, redirect your ambition, industry, and prudence. Redirect your ambition, industry, and prudence. So what's the holy ambition? And by the way, if you go, I spend a lot of time thinking about money. Some of you need to spend the right time thinking about money. Some of you are very gifted. I've been saying this for a few weeks now. Some of you are very gifted at making money. Please don't stop. Make a lot of money. We're walking into a season where we're going to have to give to move forward over and above where we're at, significantly. I had a friend of mine who, everything he touched was gold. He just knew how to make money. He's an entrepreneur guy. Whatever he started, he just made all kinds of money. I remember one time he sold his business and said, I just want to come up to the church and serve. I'll clean toilets, I'll sweep, whatever. And I'm like, man, thank you. If you want to do that Saturday morning for an hour and a half, and then please go back and start another business. Like, you're great at making money. And it wasn't obsessive for him. It didn't control his life. Is your ambition in the wrong place? If so, redirect it. And what about your industry? Like, how hard are you working? Are you pressing through that? Writers, you're staring there. I feel you. Like, you're staring at the blank screen and the cursors, and you were like, shoot me. Why did I ever want to write anything ever in my life? And you got to press through, and you just keep showing up, and you keep showing up, and eventually something comes out. Like, what's the industry? And then your prudence. What is prudent? What is appropriate to save? What is appropriate to get rid of? Listen to this line from Greg McKeown on essentialism. I think I gave this to you a few months ago, but it's so apropos. The essentialist deliberately distinguishes the vital few from the trivial many. If you're good at essentialism, you distinguish the vital few from the trivial many. How do you shrink life? How do you simplify to this is what I should give my life and time and energy to? Not all these things, this. And what do I actually have to own? Not all this stuff, this. You eliminate the non-essentials, and then it removes obstacles so that the essential things have clear, smooth passage. Marie, in her book, was telling the stories of person after person who, after tidying up their home, it's a big blowout for her. It's not like one little thing at a time. She just talks about, you do it by categories. But person after person would talk about how they got their life back. Actually, the space breathed life into their future. If we release and repurpose things that keep us from running the race, then we will find more space to serve God. Richard Foster writes, this is a classic book called The Celebration of Discipline. He says, simplicity is freedom. If you're in bondage, there's a pretty good chance your mind is loaded with all this complexity, or your physical space is cluttered. He says, simplicity is freedom. It brings joy and balance. For those of you who were at the Artifact Night, who came a few weeks ago, up on the stage, we had a friend of ours, his name is Brian, and Brian and Sally, friends of ours, they were the collectors who had a number of the things that we were able to see. It was this incredible time, able to see this. So Brian stumbled upon, actually Sally stumbled upon a story of a lady from the Victorian era. And it's this wonderful story, and I'll just give it to you in brief, because I want to read something she wrote that was so powerful. Her name is Lilias Trotter. If you're a fan of great art, you could Google her later and look up images, especially if you like watercolor. She's just amazing. Well, her story is she lived in the late 1800s, and in Britain, she'd run into a guy named John Ruskin. John Ruskin was kind of the art critic of the day, and they'd forged this relationship, and he began to mentor her, and she became quite prolific in her painting. And within a very short period of time, Ruskin made this statement about her. He said, "Lilias, you might become Britain's greatest living painter and do things that would become immortal." And so with this kind of enthusiasm, they went about him mentoring her and her painting. But something disrupted all that. She was falling in love with God in a deeper and deeper way. She'd come across a couple of books in particular that impacted her, and she'd met some other ladies, and she began praying about what it would look like to serve the poor and the needy in North Africa. And eventually, disappointing John significantly, she said, "While I'll not stop painting, I feel like God's calling me to live on mission amongst the poor and needy in North Africa, and I'll be leaving Britain." And she did. And spent the rest of her life in North Africa, essentially then her name and her work being all but forgotten. And yet, while Ruskin would have been disappointed that from his perspective she was not leaving the immortal behind, I think we could all make an argument that the people's lives who she touched, of which are significant, quite the contrary, she was affecting the eternal in ways he probably couldn't imagine. She kept a journal, and she kept painting. And fortunately, those were found. And some people are bringing some life back to her story to the point that Brian and Sally helped create a film, and it just won several film festivals, of her life in this powerful story of sacrifice. But I came across something that she read, and it's quite beautiful, and I don't know that there's a better way to close our time, because she gives us this great metaphor. Listen to what she writes. "Death is the gate of life. Man's natural thought of death is that of a dreary ending in decay and dissolution. And from his standpoint, he is right. Death, as the punishment of sin, is an ending. But far other is God's thought in the redemption of the world. He takes the very thing that came in with the curse and makes it the path of glory. Death becomes a beginning instead of an ending, for it becomes the means of liberating, the means of liberating a fresh life. Death becomes a beginning instead of an ending, for it becomes the means of liberating a fresh life." And I wonder how many of you here today, like that's what's ahead for you. A fresh life. A new beginning. And there's some death ahead for you. There's some grieving ahead to let some things go. Perhaps it's bitterness. Perhaps it's possessions. Maybe it's your own life. The great meta-narrative of the scripture is this idea that life comes through death. You may be here today and you've been in this interesting pursuit or curiosity of the person of God. But maybe God is still someone from without. Maybe God is an abstract thought. Maybe he's a dogma to follow. But maybe God's not a person in your life. The Bible says that when God becomes a person in your life, everything gets really simplified in that this becomes about a relationship and the complexity of doctrine and all those other things fall away and you get to this place where you realize that God is actually saying, "I want a personal relationship with you. Like, this is meant to be us." It doesn't end there because it's also communal. There's a communal expression, as we call the church. But God is saying, "I want to know you and be known by you." Jesus says, "If you'll believe and follow me, I'll rescue you." We in the church, we call that salvation. Maybe for some of you, today is the day of salvation. Like you just say, "Yeah, I've been resistant or hesitant. God's been without, not within." The Bible says that when we truly believe, something changes from the inside out. The Spirit of God comes and indwells us. And so what before was a curiosity, or possibly a life system that would make our life work a little better, there's a spiritual energy, literally the Spirit of God living within us. There's a spirit in us. And there's an energy source that changes the way we engage the world. The Spirit alive in us. And for some of you, maybe it's that day today. Go, I want to die to myself. We have a symbolic action for this. We call it baptism. I want to die to myself. Buried in a water grave, raised to walk in a fresh liberation of life. A few weeks ago, I said, look, whatever's happening in the future, we have to do this together. Wherever God's carrying us to, we need one another. And one of the things I said is, like, God may be placing ideas and visions in your hearts and minds, and as he does, like, just bring them on. And I've had tons of you just email in and go, hey, like, just put me in. Like, I do this, or I do that, or that doesn't matter. I just want to serve. And so I've been like, okay, just kind of collecting them. So many of you kind of waiting for the moment. And then another gentleman came just a couple weeks ago. He goes, hey, I got this vision. We're like, all right, what is it? He goes, well, let me tell you a story of my life. So Mark's a filmmaker. He's an entrepreneur. He's from Boston. And he's been here for a little while, and I guess a year and a half, almost 2 years. And he said, I got to tell you a story about my life. So kind of the nature of what I do, you know, like sometimes I'm in desperate need of cash. You know, sometimes there's a lot, sometimes there's a little bit. He said, we're at a point in time in our lives where, like, I needed cash. There were bills I had to pay. And I'm laying it before the Lord, and all I heard from God was, well, you know, till the field. And I'm not a farmer. I'm a filmmaker, so I didn't really know what to do with that. But I just felt like God said, walk into your house and just till the field. So I said, I went through my home. I looked at old gear I had, other things, and it was like, boom, we're going to sell it all. So we did, and we made $20,000. He said, I paid off all my debt. It was life-changing and freeing. All these things we talked about, this power of simplicity. He said, well, along the way, he said, I will admit, I do like to collect things, and along the way, I collected something else. And the truth is, it's been a point of tension for me in my home. And this is literally just a few weeks ago. He said, to the point that it actually helped bring this whole idea back up in my mind again. And I thought about this. He said, we're talking about journey. How can we give collectively into the future? Well, some of us are just cash poor. So when we talk about giving over and above our tithe or offering or first fruit, like, I don't have a whole lot to give. He goes, but we all have props in our stories. Like, there are things in our stories. Some maybe we just picked up and there's no emotional attachment. But if we could give that thing away, we could make some money and we could give to the church. Some have deep emotional attachment, but we really should give it away. It maybe this is actually the perfect thing to give to. And so what would it be like if we collectively came and collected some of the props from our stories and we gave these away as a church? So we went, okay, yeah, amazing, let's do it. So tonight, tomorrow, Mark, come on up here. I'm going to need you to help me explain this. So here's what we're doing. So Monday and Tuesday, like, we don't usually do things this fast, but we're like, you know what? This sounds really cool. Let's try it. So we've already been collecting a bunch of the people who said, hey, I want to volunteer. So we've got a bunch of names together. So Monday and Tuesday, Monday from 12 to 4, I think it is. Monday to 12 to 6:30, where I'm looking for Jen. There she is. 12 to 6:30. Okay, we got that. And then Tuesday is 9 to 4. And then next Sunday night, in case we have some people that didn't hear about it, 4 to 8. So what we're going to do is we're literally, like, we're going to just have a party. Like, we'll pop popcorn and play music. And if you want to bring some props from your lives, and we'll like, gather them all, buy, sell, trade, Craigslist, eBay. You already bought the URL, thepropcloset.com. You can go check that out. But you like, I, like, so tell everybody a little bit more about, like, how we're going to do this. But the other thing is, you got to tell them the story with you and your wife just recently, which really kind of prompted this whole thing.
Yeah. So we moved down from Boston a little over a year ago. And, you know, as we did, we went through that purging process like you're talking about, and we're seeing all this extra stuff. You got to make decisions. What do you bring? You know? So as a guy, it's ADHD. Any other guys that are 80? Okay, yeah. Any collectors out there? If you're a man, your hand should be up. Okay, great. So, you know, we, in times of boredom or whatever, we find ourselves on Craigslist and eBay and, you know, all these other places where we can look for stuff, right? So we talked about this before. And I'm like one of these guys that likes to, part of my story is that I have moved ahead of my wife in a lot of things without us being on the same page. And I create a lot of chaos, a lot of clutter. and it drives her nuts, and it should. So I found myself in this one season where I was looking for stuff, and I came across this this crazy Steinway piano on Craigslist for free, like up in Boston, right? So I'm like, hey, man, this is great. And there was a story connected to it. The guy couldn't sell it. He needed to give it to someone. So I said, well, I'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, without talking to my wife. And so this is one of the stories I want to say. There's many of us have stories that are connected to different pieces of our lives. This happens to fall under the category of I need to redeem a story. Okay? And I'm sure there are a few of you out there that can relate. So who's moved a piano before? Yeah, that's fun, right? Good. Yeah, that's why we hire professionals to do those things. So I got a few buddies that were not thinking, said, yeah, I'll help you. Okay. And so we went down, and man, we were on a mission. We were going to shoot and kill this thing.
Yeah.
So we put it in, you know, anyways, I got this piano, and we have moved twice since this piano has been in our possession. Okay, in a very short amount of time. Okay. And so it's been a point of conversation and frustration. And my wife finally, a couple months ago, said, why is this here? And what, you know, what are we going to do with it? What are you going
to
do with it?
Because I'm going to roll it out to the curb.
I'm about to push it on the curb with a free sign. Okay, I don't care what brand it is, you know, what it's worth, what it's not worth. It's in my way at this point, and it's frustrating me. Every time I see it, I'm like anxious. So I said, all right, well, before we do that, why don't you just go ahead and, yeah, you know, have a piano tuner come in and that understands Steinways. And so this guy comes in. I'm not even there. My wife is standing there with this guy. He walks in. He takes his sunglasses off, and he says, you have no idea what you have here, do you? And my wife's like, well, yeah, and we're about to roll this into the driveway. It's the wheels work. And he's like, no, man, this is like 1800s Brazilian rosewood Steinway. The finish on it is pretty amazing. I've never seen anything like it. I work on these all the time. He goes, this thing, if it was in the right condition, would be worth like $25,000. And my wife was like, I'm going to kill him. it pained her, yeah, that you know, we had to deal with it like this. But it was very funny. So as we started going down this road, you know, and I was telling my wife this idea about the prop closet, she's like, let's give the piano. Let's redeem that story. Let's make that right. You know?
That's awesome.
So, I mean, we all have stories, and we believe here, I mean, for the last year or so that I've been here, it's like that our story is one of the most valuable things that we own. You know, it's ours. God gives it to us, and it's constantly evolving, and we're constantly, you know, making it more interesting. Okay? So some of you have made your stories very interesting, and we're interested in hearing them and being a part of it. But, I don't know, we've set up this thing called the Prop Closet. And it's this idea that in your story, there are props, there's pieces that you need to make those stories come alive.
Yeah.
And you may not be using those right now. And you may never use them again.
Yeah.
They're in a closet.
Right.
So we're asking you to go in, evaluate, pray about it. Be like, hey, you know, how can I be a part of Journey's story? How can I go to the next step with them? I might not have cash right now. I might not have the extra $1,000 or whatever it is to be a part of this, but if you examine your life and ask God to reveal it, like something cool might happen. You might have some healing in some area of your life. You might be able to clean up your house, you know. And we're not talking about like a Goodwill item or a yard sale item. We're talking about something that's connected to you,
yeah,
something that's connected to your story. I mean, there might be some things that have zero connection. You're like, dude, just take this.
Yeah,
you know, that's
it has enough worth. So here's what we're gonna do. So like I said, you can bring it up here on Monday and Tuesday next Sunday. If it's like if you happen to have a rosewood Brazilian piano, Steinway piano, and you're like, I don't know how to get it here, we're gonna have some teams of people on trucks and stuff like that can actually come out to you.
Yeah.
There's a minimum amount, I think, like, you know, because otherwise we don't want people driving everywhere.
We'll work out the details, but if you go to the website, thepropcloset.com, there's a donate button. And as soon as you hit that, it will get your information, and we'll be in touch with you on how to proceed.
Okay.
So
if you're not driving up, but you want to, like, have somebody come to you, that would be a really effective way.
Yeah, if you need us to come get you. you know, we can work something out.
Okay, great. And so here, one of the things we're going to do is we've got some photographers that'll be here. By the way, we need a few more, so if you can be available tomorrow or Tuesday, some photographers are going to take pictures, and then we're going to like put all the props on the blog, so all of us together can like watch the props of like our stories. Like, how cool is that? So like, you're going to see my Millennium Falcon from 1980 on there. Because I'm giving it with great joy, but
it is pretty awesome.
But like, what's the something? You know, the thing like from your story, you see these things kind of come through the story, and it'll be fun to kind of celebrate what each person's doing.
Yeah, there's like a thought that like, you know, in our stories, there's some things that we've had with us our whole lives. It might be a baseball card collection. It might be a Millennium Falcon. It might be like the original, you know, Star Wars figures, you know, whatever it is. I mean, you know, your son, you know, he's like, you know, I went to his son a couple weeks ago, and we were trying to kind of vet the idea. And Paul Farmer and I were standing there with Jordan, and I said, hey, Jordan, you love Journey, right? He's like, yeah. It's like, you do anything to help them during this next phase? He's like, yeah, anything, man. I said, okay, give me $1,000. And he's just like, what?
He's like, I'm living at my parents' house. I'm 19.
Yeah. He's like, Dad, can I have $1,000? But, you know, he just couldn't get his head around it. And I said, well, Jordan, I said, okay, I had a feeling you were going to say that. How about the guitar that you bought last year that you're no longer using? Like the one that you're kind of embarrassed to talk about because, you know, whatever the reason. It's like, will you give me that guitar? Will you give the church that guitar? He said, you can have that guitar. I've got a bunch of pedals that go with it. You can have those too. So there's a way for us to give and get into this process. And so it comes from your story.
And invite your children through the process too. Your kids might have something of value to them or something that they want to give away. And this could be part of their story as well. So like, just let's do this as a family, as families, and really let's make it a celebration. If there's a really great story, we're going to have a video thing set up, so like if you want to capture some of your story in video, we'd love to do that. You don't have to. You can just show up and be like, take my item, I didn't do my hair, I don't want to be, you know, it doesn't matter, you don't have to be. But if you want to, we'll have that set up. And if nothing else, we're going to have just a time of connecting. We're going to be hanging out, just kind of sharing. I mean, I think the props are going to start a lot of conversations, so it'll be really kind of a fun time of connecting over the next 2 days.
We're looking for a way to connect with all of us, like on this process, and have a good time. We're committed to helping you tell your story the right way. So maybe you're like, hey, man, I'm not a storyteller. Just bring your story, bring your prop. Yeah. We're going to help you make this amazing and redeem some stories and encourage and inspire people to be a part of this. And as you give, there's so many principles that are going to be set into motion, not just over the church, but over your life. And so we're excited about hearing those stories. Those are the stories we're going after next. So at first, we'll start with these. Yeah. But some lady after the first service was like, you don't even know this. This is great. She's like, you know, I'm trying to think of what I got. She's like, I got a Western saddle. I'm going to give a Western. It's like $2,000. You know, and she's like, well, I got a horse too.
Dang. So,
but I mean, it could be completely outside.
This is gonna be crazy.
The box, okay?
So we're gonna have like llamas and building apes.
It's gonna be crazy. It's gonna be like gypsies. Well, we are gypsies. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Jen Jackson, stand up real quick. There's Jen over there. Jen is gonna be hanging out at the kiosk. She's running point on this thing. She's one of you who emailed in and said, "Hey, I'm an executor. I'd like to do administrative work. Do you need me?" We said yes. She's running the whole thing. So we've already picked up, I think, some volunteers, but we still need some more. How many more-ish we need? 40 to 50. We still need 40 or 50 for tomorrow, because here's the thing. Like, some of you, that if you're just really good at lifting things, we're going to need some of you just to help us people bring stuff. We need some of you that are good at, if you're like a buy-sell trade Craigslist eBay person, we desperately need you to like log it in and know what it's worth and all that. If you're a blogger person, we're going to need some people just to be putting the images in and put it in the blog. We need a couple photographers again. So please, you'll be hanging out at the kiosk, is that right? So come find Jen, please volunteer with her. If you don't volunteer and you come tomorrow, then just be patient as we figure it out. Yes, Jen, anything else?
Yes, if you click on the donate button of the website, there is a link to volunteer.
So if you need to like go check with your family and your schedule and whatever else, go to that website, click donate. There's a place where you can go, hey, I'm in, and here's the day I can be there and whatever else, if you need some time to think about it. Would you thank Mark and Jen for all a wonderful vision. Thank you, man. So much fun. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you just for these with vision and ideas and the sparks of creativity and the fun that's ahead. And really, God, what we believe will be life-giving, not just for us in the moment, that we benefit from simplifying, that we benefit from having a spirit of generosity, but for this common good. God, for what we believe exists in the future, that there will be those we meet who say, God, the followers of Jesus connected to this local community found me in my neighborhood, on the street, at a restaurant. And I was hopeless and found hope. God, the people who we've not yet met, their stories, and the creativity that's within them, that they'll one day bring to this church. God, we want to be obedient, to walk forward in great faith. Thank you for inviting us into your story. We love you. In Jesus' name. Amen.